Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, and we're in depth this hour on what voters really mean when they say they don't trust the media.
There's not enough honesty.
Where is the truth? You know, there's absolutely no substance, and it's disappointing.
I think a lot of things are taken out of context.
Just stick with the facts.
The people that are supposed to be news anchors give their opinion.
If you're a reporter, report, and let me make my own decision.
That's some of what CNN's media reporter and host Brian Stelter heard when he gathered a focus group together and pressed them a bit about why they don't trust the media. Now, more on the nuance of what some of those people said in a minute. Many of us have taken note of a Gallup poll that finds trust and confidence in mass media has dropped to new lows. When Gallup asked respondents about their confidence in the media, only 4 in 10 Americans said they had a great deal or fair amount of trust. I think our guests and you are going to have some ideas about why this is, but I also want to talk about the contradictions in what news consumers say they want and what their viewing and consumption habits reveal about what they want. So, as you join the discussion, I'd like you to do a little bit of soul searching on that. What specifically undermines your confidence in the media? How committed are you to searching out diverse points of view on authoritative platforms if you find yourself consuming opinion-influenced news and information? You see what I'm asking here? No knee-jerk reactions this morning. I want you to really think about, what is it that undermines your confidence, and how much of it has to do with the way you specifically consume news? What you want? Where you're going? Are you seeking out the most authoritative sources? Okay, you get the picture here. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter, at CarrieNPR. Steph is hanging out at nprnews.org/live. Our guest this hour, Brian Stelter, is the host of CNN's Reliable Sources, and he reported recently on that CNN media focus group that we're going to talk about, and he's with us today from New York City. And Brian, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
Pamela Newkirk is with us. She's a professor in the journalism school at NYU, also in New York. And Pamela, welcome to you. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
Brian, I thought we'd play a few more of the responses that you got in that focus group. By the way, I saw your piece on Sunday morning, so I'm familiar with what people were saying there. But you were asking the focus group about their level of trust in the media, and here's more of what those people said.
You're showing all the bad, you know. What about all the good that's being done out there?
The thing I would change would be to make sure that things were balanced.
I'd get better analysts.
I totally trust the media.
Totally.
Yes.
I am. Why?
I have the complete reverse experience than everybody here.
The outlier of the group there.
I love that guy.
tell me what else you heard there, Brian, and your interpretation of it.
My takeaway from this group of undecided voters in Las Vegas was that the media is everything. The media is everything these days. Some people think their Facebook feed is media. Some people think this radio broadcast is media. All of it is media. And as a result, people's distrust of the media is rising and rising and rising. It's because we can choose our own adventure with the news. We can choose our own sources of news. And increasingly, our friends and family members and colleagues are our sources of news. They are media. Whenever I share a story on Facebook, I'm going ahead and making media and sharing it with people. You might be more likely to trust it because it's coming from a friend, even though it's actually very untrustworthy. And my takeaway from this group was that they're frustrated and confused in some cases about how in the heck to navigate this new media world where we really are all members of the media.
Pamela, I am so glad that Brian immediately brought up this idea that you're not going to necessarily independent objective sources for news, and that's okay. Some of the information is coming to you via people with their own opinions and their own ideas, and you just, Pamela, you just might believe that more than you might believe some independent source.
Right. So it would be interesting to know, to go even deeper than Gallup did, on the the 32% who said they had a great deal or a fair amount of trust of the media, what is it that they are viewing or reading? And I think, you know, what Brian is saying is that there's so much coming at all of us, and people are not able to distinguish what is purported to be objective from just what anyone's opinion
okay,
is.
Pamela, but let me ask you about why can't they distinguish that? I don't think it's that difficult. Why are they having trouble with that?
Because we are members of the news media, and we know that there's a difference between news and opinion, and so many people don't. Many people never did, even before the internet. If you ask people the difference between an op-ed and a news article, one is supposed to be more objective than the other. Most people don't distinguish in that way, so they always have looked at everything that is in a newspaper as the same. So it's become even more confusing with so many options and so many more vehicles that are not even trying to be objective. And it's a confusing landscape.
Kendra says on Twitter, the media's need to make a profit. It often leads to sensationalized coverage. I also worry that they don't cover stories and harming their investors. Brian, I noted how many people said in your focus group, just report the news. And
right.
yet they're watching cable news like CNN, where there's a lot of analysis. They're checking in on digital sites where they're going to get plenty of opinion influenced information.
Right.
What do they really want?
I think a lot of this is about labeling. The issue I think we face in media is that things that look like journalism and smell like journalism and feel like journalism are sometimes not journalism. Sean Hannity is the classic example of this. Sean Hannity puts on a GOP campaign event every night on Fox News. He's a great broadcaster. I love watching him. But what he produces is a GOP campaign event. However, he uses the same set, the same studio, the same graphics, the same lighting, the same producers as a news side broadcast.
Uh-huh.
So at 10 a.m., it's news. At 10 p.m., it's a GOP campaign commercial. And listen, I know some viewers know the difference and recognize the difference and love Hannity for what he is. But other viewers think Hannity's a journalist, and even Hannity himself says he's not.
Huh.
So I think some of this is about labeling. Some of this is about identifying what you're actually consuming. And then I think the broader point that you're reading from Twitter is really important. There are commercial considerations, and to pretend like there aren't would be ignorant. When we say there's breaking news every single day, people start to tune out when there's actual breaking news. Not tune out in the rating sense, but tune out as in they believe what we're saying less. We need to be careful, we collectively as journalists need to be careful not to sensationalize, not to overstate or exaggerate what's going on, so that when there truly is a big story or a big crisis, or there is a true lie from a politician as opposed to a fib, then people trust us when we report that.
Good point. I'm going to come back to that, but I want to grab a couple calls here to David in Minneapolis. Hey, David, how are you thinking about this?
Well, first thing I'm thinking is that the public is getting exactly the media they deserve.
Yes.
Well, that they're the ones that want the infotainment and, you know, want to consume what's interesting and titillating at the moment. So they're getting what they get. Myself, I think I'm a pretty big news consumer, but I consume across a wide range from left to right. And don't find too many people who do that. I think most people like to just continue to reinforce their view from the left or to reinforce their view from the right.
Kind of that echo chamber thing. Yeah, Pamela, yeah. I heard you saying yes when David said we're getting the media we deserve. What would you add?
Well, I mean, it's a pretty harsh assessment, but at the same time, I don't think the public deserves the media that they're getting, but as long as news is a business and not a public interest, that's what we're going to get. And so public radio, you know, shows like yours are able to not, you know, cater to the lowest common denominator. You don't need to be as concerned as a commercial operation with, you know, what the ratings are. And so you're getting a different kind of viewer, right?
Yeah.
And so when you have a commercial network, I mean, it has to play to that bottom line. And
yeah,
unfortunately,
that's
what we'll get.
Yeah, Brian?
I didn't mean to interrupt. I was going to say, I feel like we live in the best of times, but the most uncertain, most confusing of times, meaning there's more great journalism than ever, but you have to go and find it. You have to know where to find it. You have to hunt it out.
And how many people, you know, have taken the time to learn how to be critical readers, critical listeners.
Media literacy, news literacy, and we're missing that. We're lacking that as a society. I don't want to paint with too broad a brush because I think many people do know exactly what they're consuming. But there's a lot of folks who willfully or ignorantly don't know the differences between the kinds of media they're consuming. They want to believe certain candidates or certain news sources that are slanted, purposely slanted. You know, there's a big difference between journalism outlets like CNN that try not to be biased, that might slip up, but try to do the best, most objective job possible, versus a lot of news outlets that are intentionally wonderfully biased, the Breitbarts and the Talking Points memos. I love all those sites. It's great. I want those to flourish, but I want people to know the difference between them.
Brian, one word here. I happen to have CNN on every day in the studio so I can watch to see if there is real breaking news. In the last 40 minutes, CNN has come up with this banner that I sense makes you squirm, too, with breaking news. And then it's just some latest thing that Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton said on that. That is not breaking news. I think what you said earlier about the, you know, just the sensationalism and the kind of triggering of intensity that cable news is trying to create has made us all sort of numb to the real deal.
And that's a debate we have internally. And
you'll
hear some bosses at CNN say we use the banners too much. On my program Sunday morning, my producer and I will talk about, is this really breaking news that we're going to report, and should we use that banner or not? And that's the conversation you need to have on a day-to-day basis, checking each other on whether this really qualifies as breaking news. I would say there has been a lot of real breaking news in this election, and I've been glad to see journalists stand up and take positions in certain moments, to call lies, lies. So that's not necessarily a normal position in American journalism.
That's right, yeah.
But Donald Trump is not a normal candidate and has required even more scrutiny than other candidates. So it's been interesting to see that, but I think that's also contributing to distrust in media among Trump supporters.
Yeah, Pamela, you were saying.
But let's face it, cable news gave Donald Trump a tremendous platform without intense scrutiny in the early days and contributed to him becoming this mainstream political figure.
Yeah, you know, Pamela, Brian, I heard Jeff Zucker, who runs CNN News, at some appearance yesterday, and he was saying something about the mistake we made in the early days was giving Trump so much, you know, so much airtime.
I mean, he had just all day, you know, all the time. He was just on without real critical journalism going on.
Brian, what do you think the effect of that is?
Well, Zucker has said that if there was one regret, it would be probably too many live, unfiltered rallies of Trump too early on. I would say to that, though, and I understand many people share that view, Donald Trump was a huge news story early on. He was unpredictable. He was shocking. He was offensive. He was entertaining. He was all of those qualities and many more. And so he was a huge story, and I would argue he's still obviously a huge story heading into Election Day.
Oh, yeah.
I have a hard time with the argument that he was over-covered, that he was given too much attention.
No, it wasn't
that. Maybe
that
he was given too much uncritical attention.
Pamela? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. It's not that he was given the platform. It's that there was not a lot of critical analysis of him in those early days. It was like he was just this spectacle, and he was just on without any kind of analysis or, you know, a way to process him.
Here's an interesting...
I
was going to say, Brian, here's something interesting on Twitter. The media as mainstream TV is what I don't trust, CNN, ABC, Fox. However, I trust media as PBS, BBC, NPR, real-time Bill Maher.
I mean,
which is, of course, a very liberal show with a liberal bent, a show that I find very entertaining to watch. But it's an example of opinion media as opposed to unbiased media. And like I said, I think that's great. I think that's fine. I think it's wonderful that people have more access today to the BBCs and other international broadcasters because it does give a different view of this election.
To the phones to Steve in Minneapolis. Hi, Steve. Tell me how you're thinking about this.
Hi. So I'm one of these people that have very, very, very little trust in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading the Washington Post and the New York Times rather skeptically this year. And the days after Bernie would kind of trounce Hillary, they would not run any articles on him whatsoever. He would mm-hmm. beat her, you know, 70-75 to 25. Then the DNC is revealed to have been allowed to write or edit articles that the Washington Post would write a rough draft forward to them. They would edit it, send it back for publication.
I don't believe that's an exaggeration.
Oh, no, it's an exaggeration off of the WikiLeaks email.
So Brian, what's the truth?
It was said.
But what I would say is the WikiLeaks emails are showing some sporadic, isolated examples of really bad journalistic behavior. And there are a couple of cases where you see reporters at Politico and elsewhere sending parts of their stories to the source and saying, hey, here's what I'm planning on reporting. What do you think? I think that's something that journalists have to be really careful about, should probably avoid doing. But it doesn't mean you're letting the source edit the story. It means you're letting the source see it and then argue with you over it if you want to argue with them. And then you, the reporter, decides whether to make the changes.
I mean, as a journalist, that's not something I would ever want my students to do.
Exactly. Let me do this. I want to let Steve say more. Steve?
I disagree strongly, and I would encourage anyone who just believed what you were told to go back and read the articles. They would begin by saying, Bernie, if they wrote an article reporting what Bernie did, they would then say after a comma, who has no chance of winning the nomination, and then they would go on with their article. And that would be in the first paragraph on the front page of both the New York Times and the Washington Post.
Well, I mean, Steve, I think you said this was at the Democratic Convention. He didn't have a chance of winning
right.
the nomination.
No.
Facts are facts.
This would have been in about February and March.
Hmm. Okay.
The New York Times would never say on the front page in March that Bernie had no chance.
Right.
An opinion column could. An opinion column could say that. But going back to WikiLeaks emails, listen, there are sketchy journalistic practices, but it happens on both sides. Donald Trump, I text message with Trump aides all the time in the same way I talk to Clinton aides. And what's happening with WikiLeaks right now is we're only seeing one side of the journalistic behavior. So we're seeing a few examples of stupidity with mm-hmm. reporters emailing Clinton aides. We're not seeing them email Trump aides. And I've published some of my text messages with Trump aides on Twitter just so people have a sense of how it works, how you flatter, how you gossip, how you might be aggressive, how you might say, I've got 5 minutes, I need an answer. That's just normal journalistic behavior. But when we do view it out of context, it can look kind of ugly.
Pamela, Josh on Twitter says, more and more news time is filled with opinion, not reporting. I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore mentality. But Josh is probably going to tweet back, well, that's not what I want. Apparently, lots of people want opinion and analysis because they're watching CNN and all the other cable outlets that do this.
Exactly. I mean, I think you started out by saying that people are saying one thing and doing another.
Right. I think that.
I think people want to say that they want fair and objective news, but then their behavior indicate something else. But I think the last caller brought up something really important. You know, we're coming out of a really polarizing election. Some people are just thinking about Trump because, you know, Trump has gone, you know, around the country saying that the media is biased,
yeah.
it's unfair.
Right.
But then he reminds us that Bernie Sanders also had an experience with the media that he sometimes felt was unfair, and many of his supporters feel that the media tilted towards Hillary Clinton the whole time. So, I mean, when you have two of the candidates, nominees from major parties, you know, and both of them have you know, kind of polarized the electorate in some way or came out of polarizing campaigns, it should not be a surprise that more people now distrust the media.
Pamela Newkirk is with us.
For ourselves. We've got to defend ourselves
Agreed,
more, I think, in this
Brian.
Climate where Trump is delegitimizing journalism. And you might think that's great or terrible, but that's what he's doing. Every day he's tearing down the media, tearing down individual journalists. And I think it's a moment where we in the press have to better explain why we do what we do.
I am so glad you said that, Brian, because let me just remind listeners, if you've just tuned into this conversation about the media, especially in this campaign season, Brian Stelter is with us from CNN and Pamela Newkirk is with us from NYU. Brian, why? I see way too many journalists going, well, you're right, it isn't good. You know, while they modestly defend their own outlet,
right,
they cast aspersions on many other journalists' work. Why aren't more of them standing up and saying what you just did?
Yeah, some of it's base competitiveness, but I agree. I mean, in this moment in time, I think we need to tell the readers and viewers and listeners that most journalists try their best. Most journalists are not working for the Clinton campaign or not working for the Trump campaign. In fact, none of them are actually working for the campaigns. Some of them might personally fear Donald Trump. Some of them actually, I know, have real concerns about Hillary Clinton. Journalists have a lot of different personal views, but we do a really good job, I think, for the most part, keeping those views out of the coverage and trying to report it like it is. So it is a moment we've got to stand up more strongly and say that and try to defend what we do, because you know, people are consuming more media than ever. People are consuming more journalism than ever, but increasingly feeling like they can't trust what they're consuming. So it's a challenge for us for sure.
Call here from Peter in Minneapolis. Hi, Peter. What'd you want to say?
Hi there. How you doing?
Good. What did you want to say, Peter?
I just wanted to say, you know, I think that there needs to be a different attitude in the media about, you know, underdog races and third-party candidates. I know right now for a fact that there is a candidate in the 3rd District of Minnesota, Tim Chernow, and his opponents, Democrat Terry Bonoff and Republican Eric Paulson, have refused to debate at the League of Women Voters. And, you know, I think these people need to be held accountable. I mean, they need to face their voters, and I think the media needs to give, you know, a different attitude to third-party candidates and a different attitude to the underdog races. Because, for example, write-in candidates, Google searches for write-in candidates have gone up 2,800% in this election, and we want another choice.
Peter, two things before I give this to Pamela. I heard an interview and a story last week with Tim Chernow in it about that race, and we have put out numerous invitations to the nominees of the Green Party and the Libertarian Party, and have gotten nothing back on that. So, Pamela, if you would respond to,
yeah, I mean, what he's speaking to an anger that's out there, right? People feeling that they have fewer options, that these major, you know, either people with deep pockets who get to be the nominees, and so they look at, you know, Hillary and Trump as the people who were able to, you know, win because of money. But then you're saying that you have extended an invitation, but that is not what people know. What they know is what they see, and there's this sense out there that you just can't win, you know. Bernie Sanders said the whole system's rigged. Donald Trump said the whole system's rigged. And they're coming from opposite ends of the spectrum. And so I think we really have our work cut out for us to regain the trust of the public.
Hey, Brian, I know you have to run. Last word on this?
I sympathize with anyone who feels like Gary Johnson or Jill Stein or on the local level, third parties are not getting more attention. I was actually sort of pleasantly surprised by how much press Johnson and Stein have gotten in this
That's
season.
True.
I'd actually argue there's been a lot more national coverage of them than there normally is, or there normally would have been in 2008 or 2012, et cetera. But our work is cut out for us. And if I took away anything from this focus group last week in Vegas, it's that the challenge is on both sides. The challenge is on the media side, journalist side, newsroom side, to help explain why we do what we do, help educate people on why, you know, why we try to give equal time or why we might be being so tough when Donald Trump makes misstatements. And then on the voter side or on the viewer's side, there's also some work to do, and that is to understand when news sources are purposely biased, purposely trying to sell you only one side of the story. There's work to do to understand why it is that there's this, you know, incredible kind of commercial enterprise of conservative media that is right now ensuring Trump supporters that they're winning when, in fact, they're not winning.
Right.
There's incentive to lie and mislead right now, and it's a very strong incentive. And we got some work to do, I think, on both sides to help clear that up and explain that.
Yeah, I really appreciate your candor on that, Brian. Thank you. Good to have you part
of
the show.
Thanks for having me here.
Brian Stelter, host of CNN's Reliable Sources. Pamela, I want to come back to something that you said about the need for more critical observation and consuming when it comes to news and information.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we more of us possess that? Outside of we here in the news media?
Well, I don't think we... When would you ever learn how to consume news? I mean, when you consider how journalism is kind of integral to democracy, right? You would think that we would learn more about it as students, you know.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I mean, I learned to do that in high school and college, reading all kinds of different information.
Right, but you don't really learn how to be a consumer of news, and it's a real problem, especially now with so much coming at us. I think it's harder than ever to distinguish between, you know, real news and fake news and everything in between. So I don't know. I think it does need to be part of the high school and even junior high school curriculum.
Rob says on Twitter, basic concrete facts should not be up for debate. Balance should not mean going to the other side. This equivalency thing, Pamela, is difficult too, isn't it? Journalists have been wrestling with this, particularly in the kind of campaign that we've been watching.
Right, right. But I think it's tough, it's hard, but there are news organizations that are getting it just right, as Brian said. I mean, there are organizations that are wrestling and winning the battle over how to cover something fairly, because you can't necessarily be objective, but you can be fair. You can cover all sides of an issue and allow different viewpoints to get in and I mean, there is a way to do it. I think the problem is when you go into a story with an opinion that you're not going to let the facts get in the way.
That's the confirmation bias thing,
exactly.
Here, right? And really, understanding how to recognize that in yourself. I mean, I think
precisely.
Some of this could be diminished if we just turned this back on ourselves and said, okay, this is what my confirmation bias looks like, and I'm seeking out information that
right.
buttresses what I already think.
Right.
Okay.
But I think really the problem is less what many journalists are doing or not doing, and it's more what people are consuming,
okay.
what they're choosing to consume.
Give me an example. What are you thinking
well,
of?
Well, I mean, if you turn on, I mean, I like MSNBC, but MSNBC cannot be all that I consume if I want to really know what's going on. I have to go beyond that.
Agreed.
I have to read the Times. I have to read, you know, the Wall Street Journal. I have to hear what's happening on NPR. So if you're going to a news source that you know is biased, I mean, they're not pretending to be objective. if you're going to Fox News, you should know you are going to a biased source.
Well, I, Pamela, I would say the same about MSNBC. They lean
That's
left.
That's what I'm saying.
I wish they would just disclose that. Right. Just disclose
exactly.
it. Right.
That's my point.
But they deny it, as does Fox.
Precisely. So if that's all that you're getting, if that's shaping your worldview and you're not even trying to educate yourself about what's going in the world, then that's all you're going to get. And it's unfortunate. It really does come down to the public and their ability to decipher between between all of the information that's coming at them. What is news and what is just confirming what I already believe?
Pamela Newkirk is with us. She's a journalism professor in the school at WNYU. And this is a conversation. If you've just turned it on and gotten in and you're asking, what are we talking about? I took note of a focus group, interesting focus group that Brian Stelter of CNN did with news consumers in Nevada late last week. And he talked to people about why they do or do not trust the media. And I kind of framed this show as, here's what people often say. Here's what their consumption, viewing, reading habits reveal. Do news consumers say they want one thing and go seek information in another place? I'm asking you, yeah, and Pamela and I have been talking about this. I'm asking you, what specifically undermines your confidence in the media? At 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, at @CarrieNPR, and to a call here from John in Minneapolis. Hi, John.
Hi. It's a great conversation.
Thank you.
I just kind of wanted to comment on something your guest said earlier about, you know, that we're not really taught to be consumers of news media. I guess I'm not sure what that means as far as being consumers goes, but I think the media does a great job. And I remember clearly in high school being taught, you know, how to kind of delineate between what was an opinion, what was reporting, and what was kind of both opinion and report, you know, opinion backed up by facts or
and that's
like that.
Probably and that's probably why you're a critical reader and listener, because you have been taught that. But I don't think most people are taught that in school.
Well, I mean, I went to a public high school. Maybe people just didn't pay attention. I don't know, because I have some college education, but nothing that would, you know, equip me any better for that kind of a thing. And I'm always surprised to hear that people have trouble figuring that out, because some things just seem so obvious. And I read all kinds of opinion and not opinion. You know, I read, you know, things from all over the place that are like very, very obviously slanted conspiracy theory things for fun. And, you know, and then other, you know, stuff like real reporting by the New York Times or.
But you're confirming yeah. What we're saying, that you were taught that. And if more people are taught that, then they would feel as you do, that it's kind of common sense. But it's not. You were taught.
Well, yeah, I hope more people are taught then, because it's it just seems. It seems very mysterious to me that it's hard to pick that apart. But
John,
thanks for the conversation.
I really appreciate the call. So here's an interesting fact that our Stephanie Curtis, who moderates the live blog conversation, dug up. Pamela, she says just 7% of journalists are Republicans. That's far fewer than even a decade ago. So there will be Republican listeners this morning saying, see, the journalists themselves are Democrats. That's why we get the slanted news. Is it?
I mean, it's hard to say that would have any bearing on slantedness, because, I mean, if you were a Bernie Sanders supporter and you believed the media was biased, I mean, so if most of the journalists were Democrats, then what, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't. I think people are feeling that no matter where they stand, their views are not being represented.
That's
and I
right.
think many Democrats feel that way as much as Republicans do.
I do, too. The other thing I would say to that is, as a journalist, you're not going to have your job very long if you're constantly
Precisely.
Doing your reporting through the lens of the way you're going to vote on Election Day. Seriously.
Precisely.
There's a
and
lot of checks and balances around
right.
that.
And a journalist who I think most journalists lean over backward not to allow their own views to filter into the story. So I don't buy that's a major factor. And I think Democrats and Republicans are feeling that the media is biased in some way.
Yeah, and with some egregious exceptions here, I'm going to say there are editors, there are other checks and balances to ferret out that kind of opinion-laced or just wrong reporting. Of course, somebody's going to tweet me, go, Judith Miller at the New York Times, you know, with the
Right.
I said a couple egregious exceptions, but for the most part, that's the structure of a newsroom, and that's what it's set up for, right? That kind of check and balance.
Absolutely.
Call here from Lauren in Minneapolis. Lauren, I'm so glad you called. You're 20, is that right?
Yes, I am.
You're a journalism student.
Yeah, I'm looking into it right now.
Okay, so tell me what your question is and what you're thinking as you listen to this.
So I'm just really concerned by the fact that a lot of people my age don't really understand where to find news, and most of them find it on, like, either Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat is a really big one. Mm-hmm. And I just don't really see that as being a proper way to find news. Like, I usually listen to NPR, for example, because I trust that form of news. So what do you think about the fact that people are turning to these media sources, and, like, is that reliable?
Well, I think it's a problem, but, you know, the thing is, if you go to Facebook and if you get most of your news from Facebook, you're getting news from so many different sources. And so some of them are, you know, pretty trusted sources, others are not. And so it's all mixed together, and people are not really delineating one from the other, and that's the problem that we're speaking, part of the problem that we're speaking to today.
Yeah, I think some of the issue, if Lauren, you still there?
Yes.
I think some of the issue, too, is not understanding that when you're getting information on Snapchat or on Facebook or on Twitter, it's being pushed to you. I think Pamela was alluding to this. It's being pushed mm-hmm. to you by somebody who says, see that, or I agree with this, or can you believe that? I mean, there's a motivation there. It's not as if you're going to the, and you know this clearly, Lauren, it's not as if you're going to the Times website and just reading the objective kind of report. Does that make sense?
Yeah, right.
Right, it's being filtered for you right. by someone who has their own way of thinking about the world. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Thanks for the call, Lauren. Sarah says on Twitter, I think a lot of people equate politics with their religion and that it's not going to be learned in school, so they get it from home. Alyssa says, when I read about a topic about which I am well-informed and see inaccurate and or misleading information. Here's somebody here's Robert, Pamela, who said, I get the sense that you think NPR is not biased. That's right, Robert. That is what I think. He says, you lean left. It's not only what you say, but what you choose to report on. And here's my answer to Robert. Robert, NPR, they did an interview. David Greene did an interview this morning with a conservative, I think, magazine editor. I guarantee you they got tons of email from people who vote Democratic who were not happy that they gave voice to a conservative voice. NPR is leaning over backwards to try to have mm-hmm. all kinds of different voices in this election. So that's an kind of easy, I think, allegation that the facts don't really support.
But I think that's sort of the conundrum that the media is in, right? That anytime you report on something that doesn't resonate with someone's leanings, then you're biased. If we're trying to be in the middle and cover something fairly, that means taking in all kind of views. As soon as people hear things they don't agree with, they don't listen to the person who said something that they don't agree with. They look at the media.
Right.
The media. That allowed that viewpoint to come out. So it's a difficult time.
Pamela, I really appreciate the time this morning and your views on this. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm going to grab one last call here from Brixen in Minneapolis. Hey, Brixen. Hi.
Hey.
Hi. Tell me what you're thinking about with this.
Well, a lot of the conversation has kind of brought to mind the issue of victim blaming to me. It seems like consumers are being held accountable for the content of news that they seek out, when at the same time, it seems reasonable to expect a certain quality of news, especially considering people have limited reserves of energy and willpower to potentially seek out the information that most directly impacts their life.
Yeah. So when you say victim blaming, you mean that you think we who were me, Pamela, Brian, we were kind of looking at news consumers and saying you could do more. And that sounds to us, that sounds to you like we're putting too much responsibility on news consumers.
Well, right. It's like making a metaphor. It's like people knowing that organic food is better for their health or having ideas about that. But then like the relative inaccessibility of that higher quality product based upon a variety of determinants.
Yeah. I don't know. We you know, with the accessibility online, it's there for you at a touch, I think. If you've got access to the internet, I think it's kind of how you choose to navigate that.
Sure, but then isn't there a certain amount of like steps that are involved with developing that skill set or having an awareness about it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the good point. That's actually what our guest Pamela was saying, is do you learn this kind of critical thinking? Do you learn how to go to these sites and understand what's opinion and what isn't? Where do you learn that? And maybe that's another show. Maybe that is another show. Briggs and I appreciate the call.